I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about public transportation in central Indiana. Now that the Red Line is set to become a reality, we will discuss how the development of mass transit will affect the way the people of Indianapolis and the surrounding areas live. My guests are Brian Llewellyn from Indigo, Brian Payne, CEO of the Central Indiana Community Foundation, and Casey Stockcamp, current chair of the Central Indiana Regional Transportation Authority. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about the future of transit in central Indiana. With the Red Line receiving federal funding approval, we're going to talk about how that's going to change things, change the way we live, change the way we move about Indianapolis and the areas around it. If you want to join this important conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests today are Brian Llewellyn from Indigo, Brian Payne, who is the president and CEO of the Central Indiana Community Foundation, and Cassie Stockcamp, who is the chair of the Central Indiana Regional Transportation Authority. Good to have all of you here.
Thank you. Great to be here. Thanks.
So, before we dive into kind of the specifics of all of this, this is kind of a milestone moment here, and it's something you all have worked toward. So, let's just take a little emotional stock here. What's the level of satisfaction at this moment? I'll start with Brian Llewellyn. We've got two Brians here, so I'm going to have to use last names.
Sure. So, It has been a long time coming. I have been working at Indigo, working toward transit improvements for almost 10 years. And one of the very first projects that I was involved with was outreach on the IndyConnect plan in 2009. So that kind of identified high level where some of these routes would go. And it has been a labor of love with lots of waiting. And we're excited to get started.
Brian Payne.
Well, we've been involved really pretty much from the beginning as well. We were a funder along with the Indy Chamber and Central Indiana Corporate Partnership in those early days. And I don't know. I always thought eventually it would happen. Mm-hmm. That's probably because I'm an optimist. But I feel like this is going to be a huge addition to people's ability to get to work and to get to other kinds of appointments. And we're looking to add on to that with other kinds of personal mobility networking that Brian and I are working on and with a lot of others. So it's going to be an incredibly important backbone of a new system. And the people who are doubters, I just can't quite understand.
Cassie.
I can't tell you how thrilled I am. CERTA has been part of this three-legged stool with the MPO, Indigo, working on this plan for literally the last, as Brian mentioned, last 10 years plus. So to see this come to fruition is not only rewarding, but people are starting to recognize Amazon headquarters is a perfect affirmation of what we've been attempting to do. People realize corporations want transit. It's an important way to move around the city. And the facts are coming out that we in Indianapolis used to think that it was a cheap place to live. But you truly have to factor not only your housing, but you also have to factor in your cost of transportation. And when you add those two things together, we're no longer cheap. We're right in the middle. So what we're doing here is important for the community as a whole. I'm thrilled.
Before we dive into the larger subject, I'm going to stay with you for a second, Cassie. Let's talk about what the path forward is now. I mean, yes, the funding approval is in place. The money pieces have been put together, but the thing still has to be built.
It sure does. But that really is more of a so Indigo is doing an amazing job in Marion County, and I'll let him address that. CERTA really is looking at more of the regional effort. And right now, it's still a bit challenging, to be quite honest with you. If you were attempting to move from Hendricks County or Hamilton County into Marion County, and you're trying to ride some type of public transportation, you have to stop at the county line. So we don't have a seamless system yet. And so there clearly are a lot of things that need to be done. But again, I'd much prefer that Brian then talk about Marion County, because that's where the lion's share of work is going to happen right now.
Well, we'll go there, but eventually we're going to talk about those larger subjects. Yes, Brian, what is logistically, what are we looking at now? And so, I should say this is Brian Llewellyn, not Brian Payne.
So next steps for Indigo, we will be breaking ground, I think just today, the final signature from our CEO was on for the contract for this federal funding. So we're working with our contractors, and we'll be doing groundbreaking here in the next couple weeks. We'll have 15 months of construction. Concurrently, we will be planning the two other rapid transit lines that are part of the Marion County Transit Plan, the Purple Line and the Blue Line. And mid-year next year, when we open the Red Line, we will also reconfigure the entire regular local bus network to feed into the Red Line with additional frequency and hours of service. So Indigo has a lot of implementation work ahead of us the next 18 months or so. And then there's an additional 2 years of build out of the rapid transit infrastructure for Purple and Blue.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the future of transit here in central Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So, Brian Payne, we have done a number of shows about varied subjects, and I have been shocked at how many of them invoke transit or transportation, whether we're talking about workforce development, whether we're talking about poverty, whether we are talking about food deserts, whether we are. The list could go on and on and on. So I'd like for you, I'm going to give everybody a crack at this, I promise, but what is the impact really on Indianapolis and central Indiana likely to be with the development of this sort of mass transit system?
Well, we think at CICF that the theme of the 21st century is connectivity. It's physical connectivity, social connectivity, IT connectivity. And we've been lacking in the kind of transit connectivity that great world-class cities have. And I think this couldn't come at a better time. I think that whatever we spend, a couple hundred million, 300 million, whatever that number is, on these three bus rapid transit lines and this enhancement to the networked service is the right amount to spend in 2018, because there's all this new technology that can help feed and build around that. And that's what we're doing at CICF in partnership with Indigo and Indy Chamber and lots of others, is that we're looking at how to create a personal mobility network of using bikes and Blue Indy and other kinds of transportation that we have, the Pacers Bike Share, and connecting it all into an amazing system that you can deliver through technology on an app in real time, and that you or I can define how we want to travel from place to place, and that veterans who do not have a car can get to their mental health appointments and their physical health appointments. People who need it to get to their work now have a new way of getting, a reasonable way of getting to work without owning a car. I think there's going to be all these benefits that we can't even imagine right now. But everything you said, this could solve the food desert problem. This could solve people's mental health challenges as far as getting to mental health opportunities. It's a game changer, and I think bus rapid transit is the spine of what we're going to do with new technology.
Cassie, your thoughts?
So as I look at this whole system again, I don't think we can really acknowledge what's going to happen in the future, the way it's going to impact us. The impact on the environment, cleaner air, cleaner water. The bus system is going to be electric. I think that's brilliant and that we're moving forward. Hopefully it will reduce congestion. I think people will pay attention to where they're living now, moving closer to the bus lines, moving closer to trails, something called transit-oriented development, there will be large amounts of property now that will become even more valuable because people want to live closer to these ways of getting around and moving through our community. We keep saying it's a game changer.
Brian, you get the last word. Brian Llewellyn.
Transit and transportation generally is so intersectional. That's a kind of new buzzword, right, where this kind of focusing on how people are getting around, where these investments are happening, really we have an opportunity to address long-term intergenerational poverty, disinvestment of specific geographies, programmatically provide connections to food and jobs. This transportation is a thread that runs through so many different issues. I think that the impact of what we're going to do here is going to be difficult to measure. But it's really critical foundational work that has to be done and presents opportunities for other initiatives to layer on top and be even more transformational.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the future of transit here in central Indiana. We would love to have you join the conversation. You can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, Cassie, I want to come back to what you were talking about. I mean, you know, in terms of this being a game changer for Indianapolis, That argument has been advanced. You were talking, though, about the fact that many of the pieces, you know, we're really not just one county or one city. We are a fairly sprawling metropolitan area.
We're a region, absolutely.
Here. And that goes back to actually I remember the pilot for this show we did way many years ago was with a guy named Richard Longworth who wrote the book Caught in the Middle, who said the future really was going to be about regional planning and developing centers of excellence and all of that sort of stuff. It seems like we still have a lot of work to do in that area. So can you address what some of the challenges are going to be in getting Indianapolis and the donut counties to play nicely together?
Sure. I'm just going to stick it right out there. So CERTA was put in place, I don't even know what the legislation, how long ago it was put in place. More than 4 years ago.
No, 2004.
Oh, 2004. I'm getting a little sign that I couldn't interpret right. So 2004, with some severe limitations, we are funded by voluntary contributions. Mm-hmm. A government agency can't function that way. It has no teeth. Mm-hmm. So we're having some real hard questions about what should regional transit look like in this area? How are we? What's the political will? How are we going to move forward? So your questions are spot on. And I don't have answers because I don't know that we have answers. And we in the next 6 to 18 months are going to attempt to bring a bunch of parties together and try to do some forward progressive looking thinking about this.
Some of the challenge, I'll stay with you for a moment, Cassie. Some of the challenge, too, that the counties surrounding Marion County don't necessarily see their interests as linked either, that, you know, what Greenwood needs is different from what Carmel needs, or at least they see it that way.
And it's true. We have urban versus rural divide. We have urban versus rural transit providers. Since we don't have a regional plan, as I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. we don't have that seamless connectivity. And we have pockets, large pockets of need for workers that can't get to these jobs. And so CERTA is doing some stopgap measurements by providing these workforce connectors to Plainfield and to Whitestown, which is not the holistic system, but it's filling a need right now. So we definitely have some real work to do.
Brian Payne, do you think the leadership on that level has taken place at the state level to try to get the counties together and talking about this more effectively?
Well, I do think we need the state to play a role because a lot of times they play a barrier role. I mean, it's like, you know, they pass legislation on what the counties can or cannot do or what cities can or cannot do. I know there are, like, Portland, Oregon is a great example of having a regional government. I mean, there's some things that happen at the regional level in the mm-hmm. metropolitan Portland area. So that planning, by the very nature of the way the government is set up, happens at a regional level, and they have huge benefits from that. So transportation in Portland
is world class, or at least American class, because they approach it from the region. We all know that book. We all know that we have to do a better job regionally, or in the next 10, 15 years, we could really suffer the consequences in some of our economic development opportunities. Sometimes I think ultimately the market always dictates. And so when an Amazon or Infosys or whoever the next one is comes and tells the governor, hey, that for us to come to Indiana, you're going to have to do something around regional transit, that's what's going to get the state legislature's attention.
We are talking about the future of transit in central Indiana today on No Limits. My guests are Brian Llewellyn from Indigo, Brian Payne, who is president and CEO of the Central Indiana Community Foundation, and Cassie Stockcamp, current chair of the Central Indiana Regional Transportation Authority. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the future of transit today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what, you can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Brian Llewellyn from Indigo, Brian Payne, who's the president and CEO of the Central Indiana Community Foundation, and Cassie Stockcamp, current chair of the Central Indiana Regional Transportation Authority. You also can join us by phone at 866-476-3881. That's what Jenna has done. Jenna, you're on the air.
Hi, John.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank your guests and yourself for talking about this very important issue. I am concerned as a person who lives at 10th and Sherman about the increased traffic of cars going through my neighborhood. And hi, Brian. This is Jenna, by the way, Brian Llewellyn, and we went to school together.
Okay.
hey, buddy.
Proof, of course, that Indianapolis is not a city. It is the largest small town in America. But that's
it is.
Okay.
It is. So I'm concerned about the increased traffic in and out of the neighborhoods that are just outside of the city, and wanting to know if you folks have had a lot of other people concerned with, you know, the Michigan and New York changes that are going to happen, and what you guys are doing to address those concerns. Because my neighbors and myself are concerned, but in the name of progress, we also know that if we want to get Indy on the map, we need to have some good public transit.
Thanks very much for the call, Jenna, and I'll get your former high school classmate to answer the question.
Sure.
All
so,
right.
What Jenna's referring to is our Marion County Transit Plan identified conversion of some one-way streets into two-way streets. That does several things for transit. Critically, it is easier to understand and promotes higher ridership. So New York and Michigan are a one-way pair that come into and out of downtown and serve the east side. And our transit plan has called for the conversion of Michigan Street for two-way service so that we can run east and westbound buses on Michigan Street. We're working with the Department of Public Works. We have a traffic study that is in progress right now. The city ultimately approves any of the infrastructure that moves forward. None of these projects, except for the Red Line, are 100% designed and approved and set. So there's still a lot of discussion, and these decisions will be made at the city level with good data to back it up. They have not been made yet, and there will be additional community conversations happening around that.
What are some of the other big implementation hurdles that we're going to be dealing with? I mean, it sounds like for 15 months, you know, a good part of the city is going to be under construction.
Yeah, so coordination is really critical with Citizens Energy Group doing the tunnel work throughout the city, NDOT doing work on 6570 this summer, and then some additional work further out with the North Split reconstruction. Those are all major coordination pieces, and there will have to be some really, really tight collaboration with Indigo and those agencies. We're working continually with the city and our partner agencies to minimize those impacts.
Gotten an email question from a listener named Eric, and if you want to join the conversation by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Eric writes, will riders have an Indigo GPS app to know when to expect the bus?
Yes.
Brian Llewellyn.
Yes, okay. We have just started an implementation of a new GPS system. We have some hardware on the buses right now that we have that information we use for operations. We're replacing that system, and part of that package is a rider-facing app. So that is forthcoming very soon.
Yay.
That touches on one of the objections. I think, Brian, you were on one of the shows where one of the other guests who wasn't opposed to the idea of updating the transit system, but thought actually that we may be missing a stage in the development. Do you worry at all that the changes in technology, perhaps the advent of driverless cars and some of the other possibilities that seem to be just around the road, will kind of leapfrog what we are doing here? I'd like to hear everybody's thoughts on that, but I'll start with Brian Payne on that.
So I've been privy to, through my colleague who runs the St. Paul Community Foundation over the years, about their process of spending $4 billion on light rail in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And I would not want to be them right now, because even though they have a nice system, they are not well positioned to take advantage of the new technologies. I think the fact that we're not spending $4 billion, we're spending $300 million, and we're doing it at a moment in time when we're trying to integrate all these new technologies into the system, into a shared system that we're calling the Personal Mobility Network. I think we're extremely well positioned to take advantage of new technologies, and the amount of investment in bus rapid transit is the right amount. $300 million, not $4 billion, not zero. I think we're taking that middle, small to middle approach that is the right approach in the 21st century in 2018.
Cassie, I'm going to reframe that question ever so slightly. Does the fact that this is smaller in conception and allow for that kind of flexibility make your challenges in terms of getting Marion County and the Donut Counties to work together on solving this problem easier or harder?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it will actually make it easier because people are watching. And if we can do what we say we're going to do, if we can actually overperform and do it better than what we say, they then will have a better feeling about this. And I'm sitting over here just biting my tongue, though. People need to ride more bikes.
Okay.
You know, if we've got so much construction going on downtown, here's an opportunity for people to start to lead a healthier lifestyle. And as we make the roads two ways as opposed to one way, the roads will be safer and calmer. I mean, these are wonderful things for the city.
And there's new technology in bikes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Electric assist bikes. I actually happen to own one. Mm-hmm. And now I'm commuting in my suit way more than I ever commuted on my road bike. And those are coming down in price. You can get an electric assist bike for about $2,200 that can change the game for you as a bicyclist and get you a lot farther than you ever were going to go on your own old school bike. And I know $2,200 isn't exactly cheap, but compared to a car, it's a pretty minor investment.
And you can put it on the bus, right, Brian?
Yeah, absolutely.
He was waiting to get that in. I could tell he was leaning in on it. So let me ask this, because it occurs to me, how is this going to change the way that businesses operate? Like, you know, there are times I have thought about riding my bicycle down here to do the show. It would be, you know, from my house, it's about an 8-9 mile ride, so it's not that bad. On the other hand, it also means I have to figure out time to take a shower on this end. It's far enough ahead. Are businesses going to have to adapt to these changing circumstances and have things like showers available for people who commute by bikes and all of that? Brian Llewellyn is nodding his head most emphatically here,
yeah,
so I'll go with him.
I actually gave up my car 2.5 years ago, and I bike. I'm not as hardcore as Cassie. Cassie will bike in the snow and the rain. I'll bike as soon as it's 50 degrees.
You lightweight.
Yeah. But there does have to be some cultural recognition for the fact that the clothes that you wear, the environment that you're in, the flexibility that you need to be able to arrive, you know, 10 minutes late or, you know, make sure that you get there safely in the light hours. There's definitely a cultural corporate catch-up that I think has to happen. I think that it's starting to happen slowly, and some of the more progressive companies are pretty relaxed. But, yeah, there's a cultural.
And it's happening.
Yeah.
I mean, well, and for a company to build showers versus add-on parking spots, I mean, everyone tells me that every parking spot a corporation has to build is about $50,000, 50. And, you know, you can put showers in for probably $5,000. And then everyone's interested, every corporation's interested in the health of their employees and the health care costs of their employees. And the more you can get them to ride a bike and get outside and have exercise, you're saving money there. So it's a short-term investment that has huge long-term gains for corporations. I think we're slowly coming around. But there, that could be incentivized and should be speeded up.
I've gotten a tweet from a listener. And again, if you want to join this conversation via Twitter, you can find us at WFYI. This listener writes, very location-specific question. But, John, could you ask your panelist what happened to Indigo's Purple Line? It was originally supposed to go to West 24th Street, Lafayette Square area, or nope, I'm sorry, am I reading 38th Street? I'm sorry. Area, is the West Side being forgotten? Brian Llewellyn.
So the Purple Line, like all of the lines, went through a series of studies. The point at which the route is set, that is a process that is called alternatives analysis, that was conducted by the Metropolitan Planning Organization. And based on demand, based on densities, based on where people want to go, origin, destination, the MPO selected an alternative that brought the route downtown instead of crosstown. So that was set, I think, in 2013 or 2014, and Indigo's been advancing those plans since then with additional engineering detail.
We are talking about the future of transit here in Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Martha has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Martha, you're on the air.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I drive at least four times a week to IUPUI from Muncie, where I teach, and I know that I-69 is going to be upgraded to three lane from 219 to Anderson. I don't know why it's not going all the way to Daleville, but I just wonder, in terms of regional transportation, what kind of discussion is there for a rapid transit bus service between Muncie and Indianapolis or a train line?
Thanks very much for the call and the question. Martha, I'm going to throw that one to Cassie.
I was afraid
you've
of that.
You've just added to her to-do list here, Martha. Thank you.
We have talked about it in general concepts, but there isn't really any real conversation around it. That is an incredibly expensive undertaking. Part of our challenge here in the Midwest is we're not very dense. And when you're not densely populated, it makes for an incredibly expensive undertaking to bring people together. And that's one of the benefits and the challenges we have by living here in the Midwest.
Yeah, if I could chime in.
Sure.
The question about are we investing in the wrong thing? Is this an outmoded investment to do transit? Indianapolis itself is 400 square miles, which by most measures for cities is enormous. And then you add on these regions that add an additional 400 square miles each county that you add on to that. And then Muncie is an incredibly large geography with relatively few people. It is a density issue. And to the point earlier about regionalism and kind of what's next in that arena, there's really a huge opportunity and a need for coordinated land use planning, because transportation is at its core really tied to land use.
I've gotten a message from a listener named Nicholas on Facebook, and if you want to join the conversation via Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Nicholas writes, good work on the red line, missed some of the conversation, but what other plans are in the works for reducing individual vehicle traffic on 465? I remember it was when it was only four lanes across and 69 North. I don't know for sure, but it seems like a lot of infrastructure for the benefit of Hamilton County at the expense of Marion. Okay. Well, we've walked into Cassie's fault line right there.
There's lots of conversation going on right now around all of that. The commuters coming in, the commuters going out. Who's paying for the wear and tear on the streets? We've had this huge pothole crisis. DPW, the mayor, have been talking seriously about all of this. Right now, another big issue is the I-6570 reconfiguration. Are we investing money in a poor design? Again, there aren't answers to any of this. We're trying to work closer with NDOT to talk about, can we have multimodal lanes and can we encourage more vanpools and carpooling? And we've been a little behind in the state in those areas. So there's a huge cultural shift that has to happen within actually the Department of Transportation's, the DOTs of each county and at the state level to include alternative modes rather than just cars.
Brian Payne, you look like you want to say something.
Well, we're also very involved in the 65-70 split. I've got a big meeting with some of my teammates on that with Commissioner McGinnis tomorrow afternoon. I understand there's a governor's meeting with business leaders tomorrow morning. This is at a really hot point about what's going to happen with 65-70. I think what we need to do is we need to get more consensus that in this century, we need to be thinking about multimodal transit and how transit can either affect positively or negatively quality of life and economic development and health. I think we're learning all of this, and we need to kind of do a big comprehensive study around how our freeways are going to work in downtown Indianapolis, but also how 465 needs to work and what this new technology will do. And then I think Cassie's right. First of all, the red line and the other lines, that'll build more density. It'll actually create density. But people need to think about how they want to live their lives. And if they like to get into a car for 45 minutes, that's fine. They have the right to do that. But they might want to think, if they don't want to ride for 45 minutes, moving closer to their job and getting on a bike. There's a lot of decisions about where you live. And I know not everyone has the flexibility to pick up and sell their house and move. But if you haven't bought a house yet, think about how you want to, what's important to you as far as connectivity and getting around.
Or whether you even want to buy a house, whether you want to rent or anything like that. How much of this is a product of the fact that we now, as opposed to, when a lot of the road construction went on in the middle of the 20th century, we now know how this can affect people's lives. We now know some of what's going on with the I-65, I-70 is they learned from the construction of the interstate system that in a lot of cities, not just Indianapolis, old neighborhoods were just blown apart. Yeah. Brian Llewellyn, how much of this is, we now know these decisions can have really long-ranging implications.
So the National Environmental Protection Act, NEPA, is the process that NDOT is going through right now to look at the North Split. And that was done in the early 60s after the highways went in and there was a kind of recognition to the negative impacts. All of our projects go through that planning process as well. I think that we're beginning to recognize that there are different values that come to bear in the planning process beyond just how quickly can I get from A to B. There are other kind of tangential impacts, and we should be intentional about all of those, not just what is the travel time and how quickly can I get somewhere.
We're talking about the future of transit here in central Indiana. My guests are Brian Llewellyn from Indigo, Brian Payne, who is the president and CEO of the Central Indiana Community Foundation, and Cassie Stockcamp, current chair of the Central Indiana Regional Transportation Authority. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the future of transit in central Indiana today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Brian Llewellyn from Indigo, Brian Payne, who is the president and CEO of the Central Indiana Community Foundation, and Cassie Stockcamp, current chair of the Central Indiana Regional Transportation Authority. I can see we've gotten a lot of emails and Facebook messages and tweets, so we've already gotten several calls on this. We're going to try to get to as many of them as possible, so I'm going to ask listeners, if you call in or you write an email or whatever, to try to be as concise as possible so we can give as many people as possible a chance to join the conversation. This email comes from a listener named Neil, and again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Thanks for dedicating some time to this important topic. As a business owner on a route where the Red Line will be constructed, I'm willing to tolerate the inconvenience of construction to participate in the benefits of rapid transit. Transit will provide my team an affordable and dependable method to get to work, as well as give them more convenient access to green markets, grocery stores, and other amenities that make for a better urban quality of life. I just want to applaud your panel for thinking big and making a difference to those that otherwise might be on the margin.
Yay.
It's got to feel good to hear.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, the other email we have, this one's probably going to be for Brian Llewellyn. It is from a listener named Mary. Mary writes, I read in the IBJ about the same company who is producing buses for Indigo. It's a Chinese manufacturer who has not made deadlines and has had multiple mechanical problems with buses. Can the panel address that issue, and are you looking for a different provider for buses for your new system so it's more likely to be successful? Thank you, Brian.
Sure. So buses are manufactured by a firm called BYD, and they have started up a North American operation. All the buses that we're buying are manufactured, and their major components are also manufactured in America. The issues that they've had in a couple other cities have been related to very, very aggressive timelines. There were also some missteps on matching up the specifications of the vehicle to some of the infrastructure. So we're working closely with the vendor. We have really strong contracts in place. And if there is any kind of failure for the contractor to deliver, we will not be on the hook for those issues, and we will have ability to secure a new vendor.
We've gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Michelle. Again, you can find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI. Michelle writes, why is Lawrence Township so underserved by Indigo? No buses at all, even on our main thoroughfare, Pendleton Pike. My son has to ride his bike 40 minutes to get to a stop.
So
you're getting all of these, Brian.
The original funding source that takes care of Indigo's operating budget is property tax. All of Marion County contributes to the tax base that funds Indigo, except for Lawrence. So the town of Lawrence is an excluded city that did not opt in the early 70s to the taxing authority that funds Indigo. So this is a kind of long-term historical issue. Added to that,
they're like an island in the river. The water has to flow all around them.
Yeah. So the new funding source that the state legislature and the voters and the city council approved, that does bring some resources. But again, we're still trying to cover 400 square miles. The Purple Line will have service into Lawrence. We have some other local routes that'll stop in Lawrence in the future. But but we're still only going to rank 65th out of the cities in the country in terms of transit availability per capita, even after we're fully done with our plan.
So let me add, because it sounds like if that decision was made in the early 70s, that's a decision that was made 45 years ago or so that still has implications for today. Are there other decisions or policies that were put in place years back that we need to take a look at if we're able to deal with the challenges, really, of you know, integrating communities more effectively? Brian Payne, I'll start with you on that.
Well, thanks. I mean, I think that's the argument we're trying to make with NDOT around the 65-70 north split and all the downtown freeway infrastructure. Because when that came in the 70s, that certainly hurt a lot of neighborhoods, but it destroyed African-American neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. It destroyed them. I mean, it took them out of the city. And that happened all over America. So one of our arguments on the 65-70 split is, let's not double down on bad ideas from 50 years ago. Let's find the right approach to prioritize not just moving people fast, like Brian said, but certainly we need to move traffic. We get that. Let's find the right balance of how people need to move that honors people's quality of life, that honors people's neighborhoods. I mean, people are, you know, we're seeing incredible homes built in Heron Morton, you know, on the mm-hmm. north side of Indianapolis between 16th and 22nd. But 5 years ago, there were still tons of empty lots. Mm-hmm. It's taken 45 years to overcome the freeway mm-hmm. on the north side of Indianapolis. Are we going to, you know, the idea, what we know we don't want is we don't want to expand the lanes and create walls, sound walls, that actually create more of a separation from near downtown neighborhoods and downtown. It's about, we want connectivity. No one's going to ride a bike under a 200-foot dark freeway overpass. People just won't do it. I mean, Cassie Saucamp will, but no one else will. And
she gets lonely
sometimes. But yes, there are just, you know, what we don't want to do is make another decision that has another 50 years of impact, of negative impact.
How much of this also, I mean, that decision, my understanding is that, you know, the Eisenhower administration, which really sort of launched the interstate system, originally had proposed that the interstates be outside of metropolitan areas, that you would have to drive from a city. Brian Llewellyn is looking at me like maybe I am, in fact, right here. And that, you know, a lot of the city bosses and a lot of members of Congress said, whoa, no, we're not going to have major construction projects, all those jobs that will come with that, and not get a piece of that. Are there political compromises that we have had to make to get this thing along that could have some unintended consequences? I'll start with Cassie on that one, since she's...
Oh, geez. My mind just kind of went blank. And as you were talking, though, about, I'm going to divert a little bit back to things we haven't talked about, and I'm going to say it out loud. I think property tax caps are something we have to address mm-hmm. as a community. I know municipalities have been decimated by that, and we're seeing serious shortfalls, and that's a whole other thing. But you're talking specifically about unintended consequences from the mass transit piece that we're doing.
Well, I think anything, you know, like the interstate system.
Oh, well, the
was a
tra-
but was that was a but again, that was a political compromise.
Sure.
To get the interstate system off, they had to run them through cities, and the cost ended up being that a lot of African-American neighborhoods were blown up.
Well, and I also think, though, at the time, there was such a relish of this new thing called the automobile that we started designing for cars, and we lost people. We lost community. We lost what we are supposed to be about. In fact, at one of those meetings Brian was talking about, I asked the representatives from the Federal Highway Administration, what is your intent here? What is your outcome? And verbatim, they told me, our objective is to protect the federal asset. It's not about people.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the concrete. And that's not how we have a community. And so we have an obligation to push back and say our community needs to be.
I figured Brian Payne would want to jump on that one.
Well, you know, what we have learned in community development and what we've learned in the last 20 years is that every solution to a challenging problem or every big idea needs cross-sector cooperation.
Mm-hmm.
And NDOT is just maybe starting to understand that. But for example, when we talk to NDOT about the 65-70 split, and we say, hey, you know, there's a big economic development play here. If you talk to the Indiana Economic Development Corporation down the hallway in the government center, and their answer is, no, we're not, that's not what we do. We are about moving cars. We are about building traffic congestion relief. Relief, that's what we're, yeah, thank you, Cassie. And it's like, well, wait a minute, though. The big ideas involve more collaboration, and everything is cross-sector. I mean, community development, for example, it's not, we used to think 40 years ago, you just build nice, affordable housing and you've got good community development. No, you have to do trails. You have to do connection to education. You have to do job training. You have to do parks. You have to beautify a neighborhood. Housing is important, but it's not enough. You know, relieving traffic congestion is important, but it can't be the only thing we look at. And we need to catch up to this idea that, I mean, the state needs to realize that they need to collaborate with their cities if we're going to create a successful 21st century city and state.
We are talking about the future of mass transit here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Dan has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Dan, you're on the air.
I find you have already sort of partially answered my question in the last 5 or 6 minutes here, but I can't help but wonder whether some or all of the 3 or 4 or 5 of you sometimes let your mind wander off and fantasize about what it might have been like to live today were not the last 100 years consumed with a sort of commitment and love affair with the automobile. If we had just gone from trains to interurbans to trolleys to streetcars to...
Let me see if I can get you an answer on that, Dan. Thanks very much for the call.
All right.
Certainly. Cassie, since you chuckled, you get the first crack.
Not
chuckled, and I should say not chuckling. It was an appreciative chuckle.
It was an appreciative chuckle, because when you stop and think about the number, the miles of roadway in this town, we spend so much money maintaining streets as opposed to parks, as opposed to schools, as opposed to... I'm just chuckling in agreement with him. Mm-hmm. What if we hadn't done that? But we did. So how do we try to make the best of what we have and where we are? So I'm lock, stock, and barrel with dreaming what could have been, but we're not there.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Rosemary. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Rosemary writes, please discuss safety issues. Is College Avenue wide enough to allow emergency vehicles to pass through without cars needing to pull up on the sidewalks? Brian.
The short answer is yes. We have a standard operating procedure that we've developed with IMPD and the fire department. There's operational planning and there's also infrastructure planning that has happened. The dedicated bus lanes can be used for emergency response. We're upgrading all of the traffic signals, and the traffic signals will communicate with our vehicles and the emergency response vehicles.
We've gotten a question from a listener named Catherine via Facebook. Again, on Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Catherine writes, what's the plan for sidewalks so that people, I'm going to paraphrase, so people can get to the new transport systems without walking in the street or in the grass? Indy is severely lacking in sidewalks, which help build community. Brian.
This is another legacy problem that, you know, we have prioritized everything for the car at the expense of many, many other objectives or priorities. Specifically for the Red Line, Indigo has partnered with the Department of Public Works, and the Department of Public Works has secured additional funding to help build missing sidewalk connections to the Red Line. However, Marion County government in the 70s, during the UNIGOV era, basically gave sidewalk waivers for every new development that came online. So we have a lot of catch up to play.
Well, it's up until Peterson's administration.
Yeah.
We have gotten an email question from a listener named Andrew that will be close to Cassie's heart. Andrew writes, what is red line, other line impact on bike lanes? Will they compete or be synergistic? College Keystone is already scary for cycling.
I'm going to let Brian answer that because I know they've paid a lot of attention to the bikes as well.
So we're also working with the city on planning for mobility hubs, places where trails and transit and parks and greenways all intersect. The red line, you'll be able to take your bike on the bus. And for the segment of the red line near Methodist Hospital into downtown, we're actually relocating bike facilities. So there will be two-way facilities on Illinois, and the transit will be two-way on Capitol Avenue.
We've gotten a question from Justin on Facebook. He says, have we looked at an Indy tax? A friend of mine in Denver recently told me that if you live outside of Denver but work in the city limits, then you are taxed $1 per paycheck. All funds go to roads. Could help work out our pothole problem. Also, when will Indigo get some form of tap-in system for the buses, Smart Trip, Metro, BART? Brian?
Yeah, so we're actually wrapping up a procurement right now for a fare modernization project. So those bids will be coming in the next couple weeks, and we're taking a contract to our board for approval in June. So the smart fare system is on the way. And the tax, that's been discussed for a while. That's another kind of legacy issue. The state legislature in Indiana is one of the few places that you pay your income tax where you live, not where you work. And there is no mechanism to capture. We're also not a home rule state. So the state legislature basically has to enable any new mechanisms like that. Local communities don't have the authority to pursue those on their own. So it's going to require some concerted conversation, and panelists might have something to add.
We have, we're getting a little bit close on time, and we've gotten several questions that are asking kind of the logistical one. With the delay, what is the expected finish date for the construction of the Red Line? When will be the first day that people can get on it and go somewhere?
So we're anticipating the construction will last 15 months. So we're looking still at summer next year, late summer probably. We're working with the contractor right now. We've been waiting to start groundbreaking until the grant's been available. That just got signed today. And so that is some good progress. We will do a groundbreaking ceremony here in a couple weeks. We'll start construction on the south side and then wrap up next summer.
How will each of you, just a few seconds, how will each of you celebrate when it's finally done? I'll start with Brian Payne. I'll give you about 5 seconds.
I'm going to take my bike on the red line downtown and check it out and then ride my bike back home.
Okay, Brian Llewellyn.
I will actually go to Broad Ripple because right now it just takes too long to get there.
And Cassie, you get the last word.
I'll drink a bottle of champagne with you guys.
I'd like to thank my guests, Brian Llewellyn, Brian Payne, and Cassie Stockcamp for a lively conversation about the future of transit here in Indianapolis. Also like to thank our listeners for some great questions. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.